Dumbfounded and exasperated by Evan and Shammah's explanation of the Likud's position on UN Resolution 242, quoted earlier. The whole purpose of Bidyan speak has been to confuse and befuddle people into thinking that something logical or sensible is actually being said. When Begin and Shammah have announced their willingness to negotiate with the Palestinians, but not about the future of the West Bank and Gaza, it is equivalent to Gorbachev announcing at the beginning of strategic arms talks that he was ready to negotiate everything but intercontinental ballistic missiles. The opportunity, although the current situation in the Middle East is near flashpoint and the threat to world peace has never been greater, paradoxically the opportunity for genuine peace has never been more promising. The events of the past 18 months have opened up possibilities which have heretofore been non-existent. In a sense, it can be compared to a planetary alignment in the solar system. If acted upon quickly, it can achieve remarkable results, as we have seen in the Voyager 2 space probe. But, as in the solar system, such alignments are rare and transitory. Included among the comparatively recent developments are the following. The Bush administration has expressed a willingness to take a fresh look at the Israeli-Palestinian deadlock too. The United Nations is increasingly more willing to assert itself and to assume a more positive role in attempting to resolve the Middle East 3. The acceptance by the PLO of Israel's right to exist and its agreement to suspend terrorist activities so long as bona fide peace efforts are in force. The willingness of representatives of the US to talk directly to five. The determination of the Palestinians to continue the intifada until Israel removes its occupation troops. Six. Numerous indications on the part of the American Jewish community that, while continuing its strong loyalties to Israel, it is becoming increasingly skeptical and disillusioned with the policies of the Likud. Taken together, these new circumstances have opened an unprecedented opportunity for a real peace movement which, if undertaken without delay and pursued vigorously and wisely, has a high prospect of success. The great danger is that this historic opportunity will slip from our grasp and be lost forever, either because the parties do not see it for what it is or do not have the courage and will to pursue it. In the Israeli-Palestinian crisis, there are time imperatives which are beyond the power of anyone to. There is another obstacle inherent in the nature of the issues which also makes many good faith attempts at achieving peace doomed from the sincere efforts of many well-meaning people to break the Middle East deadlock by trying to persuade Shammah to talk to the PLO, even if it were to succeed. Unfortunately, does not bring peace any closer. Indeed, it is counterproductive, because it not only wastes precious time in what would certainly be interminable negotiations, but what is more important, its elections, with or without representatives of the PLO, are meaningless. At best, after endless haggling, all that could possibly be accomplished would be to determine who would represent the Palestinians in negotiations with Israel on an issue which cannot be negotiated. The futility of negotiations between Israel and the Palestinians. There is a belief, unsupported by history, but commonly accepted in even the highest diplomatic circles, that the secret for reaching a settlement between nations on dangerous unresolved issues is to convene a peace conference and coax or drag the parties to the bargaining table, whereby some alchemy, and with enough time, the parties will negotiate a proper settlement of their differences. Negotiations are somehow considered to have magical properties, so that, instead of being a process, they tend to become an end in themselves. They become rituals, rather than mechanisms for reaching solutions. What must be understood and accepted, if any progress toward peace is to be made, is that the future status of the West Bank and Gaza is a non-negotiable issue. There is much to be learned from the bitter experience of the Paris peace talks, in which the US tried to end the Vietnam War by negotiating a peace with honor and failed disastrously. In 1968, the Vietnam War had been in progress for approximately 3 years, during which President Johnson had vainly tried to arrange a truce with North Vietnam as a prelude to peace negotiations. Despite his desperate efforts to get the North Vietnamese to the bargaining table, he failed. On March 31, 1968, Johnson publicly announced his intention not to seek re-election. The North Vietnamese then agreed to negotiate, provided there would be no cessation or reduction in the fighting, which proceeded full scale. The US sent a negotiating team headed by Averell Harriman to Paris to meet with the Vietnamese representative Duyen Thu I. The peace conference opened in Paris on May 10, 1968, on a note of euphoria in the US delegation. The US position was clear and unchangeable. It wanted South Vietnam to be free to choose its own government. The North Vietnamese position was equally clear and unchangeable. It wanted all of Vietnam under communist rule. The positions of the parties were, of course, irreconcilable and not subject to compromise. This did not, however, deter or discourage the negotiators. They diligently tried every day to negotiate the non-negotiable. The negotiations continued all through the remainder of 1968, with each side simply repeating their respective positions without any progress, except that the fighting continued to get worse. When the Nixon administration took office in January 1969, a new negotiating team, led by Henry Kissinger, took over the negotiations. The North Vietnamese delegation was then headed by Le Duc Tho. The frustrating and fruitless negotiations dragged on for 4 more years, through the Nixon administration, and almost into the Ford administration. Kissinger tried every conceivable tactic to extract concessions or compromises from the North Vietnamese. He alternately threatened, and after each session, which consisted of repeating what they had said in the previous session, the negotiators would appear before the press and solemnly announce that the talks had been helpful, or some other innocuous and meaningless bit of diplomatic jargon. After many fine Parisian dinners and champagne toasts, the negotiators, out of exhaustion or boredom, finally signed a truce agreement which pretended to guarantee South Vietnam's independence. Finally, it was as we know, after the US forces were withdrawn, and the South Vietnamese took over, the North Vietnamese army simply rolled over South Vietnam, just as they had always planned to do. Sagan's name was changed to Ho Chi Minh City, a name that doubtless had been picked out tragically. More American soldiers were killed after the peace talks than had died before. The cost to the nation in blood, pain, death, and resources of the failure of our diplomats to recognize the impossibility that the negotiations could succeed is immeasurable. A non-negotiable issue can be won or lost, but simply cannot be compromised. After the battles of Lexington and Concord, American independence was non-negotiable, even though the British tried hard to open negotiations with Washington, which included an offer of autonomy for the colonies, if Washington would only disband his unconventional forces, who persisted in firing at the British from behind stone walls. George W. Ball, former Undersecretary of State in the Johnson and Carter administrations and ambassador to the United Nations, shares this view as to the futility of direct negotiations between the parties in the inner brilliant article appearing in Foreign Affairs, April 1977, issue entitled How to Save Israel in Spite of Herself. He argued for the US to step in and set the terms of settlement. Nonetheless, it is the conventional wisdom to reject any suggestions that the United States set the proposed terms of a settlement. Instead, we must let the parties find their way by palaver to some common meeting ground somewhere near the center of a no man's land studded with landmines of hatred, religion, vested interests, rigid dogmas of military necessity. For those who believe such a feat of diplomatic navigation is many who oppose the injection of an American plan of settlement appear to regard negotiation as a mystical process that automatically grinds out solutions. Yet experience has shown again and again that effective negotiation requires at least 4 preconditions, none of which now exists with respect to the Arab-Israeli struggle. First, there must be a desire on each side to find a solution. Second, both sides must be convinced that negotiation is not a zero-sum game, that, in other words, the offer of a concession is not merely an advantage to the other side, but a benefit to both. Third, the leaders of the negotiating nations must be sufficiently secure in their personal political positions to risk making the concessions needed for a settlement. Finally, the parties must start from positions sufficiently close if they are, by their own efforts, to one of the most difficult problems to be overcome in peace negotiations is the weakness of the negotiators in relation to their constituencies. The extent to which either side has the power to make unpopular concessions is extremely limited.